In Ukraine, it's 3:21 in the afternoon. That's where Joseph Lindsley is. And Joe, reading about Ukrainian forces scoring more gains in their counteroffensive across at least two fronts in the last 24 hours. So they're advancing into the same areas that Russia is trying to absorb, aren't they?
Absolutely, Bob. Good afternoon. I'm speaking to you from the mountains. I made a quick trip here. We have, especially in the Kherson region, which is, exactly one of these regions that the oblast of Ukraine, that Russians have occupied most of it since really early in the war, since March and April. And today, I think there were seven towns that were liberated, most of them along the Dnipro River. And so the Dnipro is the same river that it goes from the Black Sea up through Kyiv, very important waterway. And these towns are near the city of Nikopol. They're not so far from that largest nuclear plant in Europe, but they're sort of they're on the other side of the river from the nuclear plant. So very important strategically, these places. And we're seeing methodically, piece by piece, Ukrainians are taking back territory. And by all accounts, the Russians are fleeing as soon as the Ukrainians approach. And so this is very good news. On the other hand, I think in President Zelensky's comments the other day saying, I'm ready to join NATO, I see almost a new energy, like a freshness to the Ukrainian military, to the Ukrainian leadership, because these victories are really doing a lot for morale. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, there's a heaviness of this nuclear question. Mm-hmm. It's something that everyone here is talking about. And I just finished a 7-hour hike in the mountains with friends and, peacefully, far away in the forest. And everyone, is still getting messages from friends in different cities around Ukraine saying there's a bad feeling that something's going to happen today, tomorrow, the next day. It's a difficult thing to reckon with, and then we were one of the volunteers in our group that was hiking, what has been trained for how to respond to a nuclear attack. Hmm. Saying like the things you have to do in the first seconds, so to avoid the fallout. And these are questions we really have to think about in a way. But at the same time, there's different ways you can respond. You can respond in panic, or you can respond, I think, as the Ukrainians do, even with humor. And so one of my friends here is a barber, and he had some clients calling for a haircut tomorrow. And he said, maybe not. Maybe we won't be around.
Wow.
you have to laugh about it. But also it forces really profound conversations for everyone. And, just on this hike, for example, I'm talking with people with Ukrainians about life and what's the meaning of it and how do you live it fully? And, what are the regrets from before the war? And then with the volunteers that come from all from different countries and including today, stories of why people chose to come to Ukraine. And I was, for example, a lot of the guys that come here to fight, as we've talked about before, they were trying, they wanted to fight for something noble that was clear. Other people were just playing video games at home, and they realized these video games they're playing war games. Hmm. And they said, wait, I can go do the real thing. I can live my life with some more purpose. Hmm. And so that has been what's been populating our conversations today, but also the past few days in Lviv, as we have this kind of cloud hanging over us, what is coming next? But I think the key is, and I ran into a writer, he's Canadian-born Ukrainian writer based in Lviv yesterday, and he said, the key thing with Ukrainians and anyone here is to not let that fear overtake your life. And so that's one of the best things you can do is joke about it. And that seemingly small step, it enables you to get to a point of rationality. You can rationally say, okay, obviously Putin's trying to scare all of us. Let's step back and see, what is he really capable of? And from that point, you can begin to say, okay, I can take a couple steps. I can keep doing my job. And that's how you get through this atmosphere of, because it is scary, but this is, we find ways to really survive through it. And I think it goes back to what I was thinking of yesterday with, refusing to be a victim. It's so easy just to say, I'm scared and I'm going to hide. But that means you've lost. And Putin wins the propaganda war. And we see this with the supreme leader, the Ayatollah of Iran, is trying to say that Israel and United States are organizing the protests that are happening in Iran right now. And because the tyrants are so, the only way the tyrants can have power is if they keep us in fear. mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And this is the lesson we learned from Ukraine, but also we can see this in Iran now. And I think it's a lesson that everyone back in America can really, you know, how much do we choose to be governed by fear, or how much do we choose to resist that with humor, with being authentic?
I want to read something to you, Joe. A medic in the Ukrainian military wrote this. His name is Yegor Fursov. He was a member of the Ukrainian parliament from 2014 to 2016. And he wrote, "This war is Putin's fatal mistake, not because of economic sanctions and not because of the massive losses of troops and tanks, but because Putin's soldiers are from some of the poorest and most rural regions of Russia. Before this war, these men were encouraged to believe that Ukrainians lived in poverty and were culturally, economically, and politically inferior. Now the invaders have seen the reality. The Ukrainians live better than they do. The war has brought that reality home to me, too," he writes. "When Ukraine and Russia left the Soviet Union 30 years ago, we had the same resource-based economies, the same endemic corruption and poverty. Foreigners would often think Ukraine was part of Russia, and even Ukrainians did not always understand the fundamental differences between Russians and us. But at some point, our paths diverged. 10 years ago, Ukrainians could drink beer with Russians after the European Championship soccer matches. But we didn't realize then that Ukraine was moving forward and Russia was moving in the opposite direction. Ukraine was trying to build a path to freedom, and Russia was building a path back to the Soviet Union. Eventually, we grew too far apart and something snapped." And then he closes this a little essay by saying, "Every day for months, I have been carrying Ukrainians who have been wounded in the fight to protect what we've built. Now the invaders have seen what we've built, too. That's a truth that they can take home with them." Well, what do you think? That's wow. Pretty strong, yeah. Isn't it?
That's exactly it. And we've heard these stories of, you know, the Russian invaders being amazed that people in villages have running water or iPads, you know, and they haven't even seen, you know, how people live their lives with a sense of joy. And even in the war, even in the time of threat, you know, that you people, there's a happiness here. And I was talking with an American American official who was here, and this person was saying, to be in America, whenever this person has to go back to America right now, it's difficult because the people here are happier than they are in America right now, even under this dire threat. And I think there's a lot that maybe the world will begin to see, not just the Russians, but about how you can build a happy and functioning democracy. And I think the Ukrainians have begun to figure that out. And maybe there's a lot we can all learn from this together.
Yeah, isn't that something? I mean, we can only imagine here what it must be like for you in Ukraine and the people there living under the threat of possible nuclear attacks. And you really, really paint a picture of what it is like and bring that home to us. And we appreciate that, Joe. We'll talk again tomorrow.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you. We have to go back to that Odessa humor of your father.
Yes, we all need that. From the mountains of Ukraine, Joe Lindsley.